with Rick LaPont today, who's the GM of Team System, and we're going to talk about lots of stuff today. So.
And who are you, first of all?
I'm Jeff. You know me.
You're Jeff.
I'm Jeff Sandquist. You know me back from when I actually, before I got a real job and I was part of this Channel 9 thing. And now that I've got a real job, I'm actually with one of the coolest products that we're going to be, that we're on the path to come out with very soon, and Team System.
Cool.
And I'm here with Rick.
And who are you?
So I'm Rick LaPlante. I am the general manager of the Visual Studio Team System. And so I guess Jeff asked me to give you guys a little bit of context about me. So what's the Team System, sort of my background? I can draw it for you on the board, probably the easiest thing.
Go ahead.
The Team System is really a set of products designed to do a couple things. First and foremost, it's designed to integrate all of the roles across the development process. So in the first release, we focused on expanding out from the developer to two more roles. So if you think about sort of the enterprise developer in one space, we've expanded out to sort of the enterprise architect, another space, and as well sort of the tester, sort of the test role is another space. So if you look at the product line today, we've gone from sort of developer focused to development team focused, adding testing and architecture. And then the way this whole thing comes together is there is a server infrastructure, which we call the Team Foundation server piece, which controls all of the integration across all these different products. So some of the obvious examples are if you're running a test and it fails and you want to log a bug against that, well, you simply right-click and you get that functionality in the Team Foundation server. So that's kind of what I run. I have been working on this product for an embarrassingly long amount of time. It actually started, people always enjoy this story. It's going to continue to evolve, but at the pace of productivity, you know, you can only add so much IntelliSense, right? And so the next big thing was, how do you get secure code? How do you get reliable code? How do you get quality early and often? All of these things. And that sort of led to this notion of the Visual Studio Team System. And from there, we spent a few years, literally a few years, with 200 or 300 customers, customer visits, which was a really exciting period of time for me. And sort of what came out of that was effectively the Team System that exists today. So before that, actually, I spent almost 18 years at Microsoft, sort of almost an entire adult life. Actually, it was certainly, I had my 21st birthday here, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, one of the things that, yeah, Prashant's laughing over there. One of the things
I don't do cameras. So
who are you? You got to do it if you're here in the room.
I'm the group product manager for Visual Studio. I've been at Microsoft for 9 years, and Team System and Visual Studio 2005 is my baby.
Wow. Awesome.
So, anyway, but before
that, you've been here 18 years?
Yeah, no, I've done just about every job in product
almost
development.
Almost as long as Larry has.
Larry.
Osterman.
Oh, yeah. So I started out in 1988 working on support for the C5.1 compiler. This is before there was C++. And so I worked on the compilers for a while, and I was a tester. It's interesting things. I was the development manager for Microsoft's internal tools organization for several years, which is actually where we got a lot of the tools that we're shipping. So the profiling tools we built, you know, 10 years ago, the issue tracking tools we built 10 years ago, stuff that we've been using internally for a long time. So it was kind of one of those, you know, I built them, we used them internally, I went on, I was a group program manager of the C++ team for a few years. I was director of business development for the division, actually, which was when we started sort of this team, Team Foundation serving the Team System project up. So, yeah, spent a lot of time doing that. Ended up coming back into product development and then running the team for building out the Team System. So, yeah, I've done just about every job in product development inside of Microsoft, including working in support. So,
if you had an MVP in here, what would be the 2-minute pitch for Visual Studio Team System?
I think the 2-minute pitch is pretty straightforward. It's you know, it's about integration and it's about ease of use. You know, another picture I like to draw, which I think really makes the point, is this notion of the existing enterprise tools market today. And it kind of looks like this, right? If, you know, we always draw the sort of the database market as a triangle. If you think about it, this is the penetration of enterprise tools today. So, you know, it's between 7 and 10% of all professional developers would actually say that they use an enterprise tool outside of source code control. And people ask me, so is this the target market for the team system? The answer is absolutely not. The target market for the team system is actually that.
Okay.
Which is...
And who are those people?
This is a set of people who have a need for predictability in their engineering processes. They have a need for high-quality software. But so why aren't those people using these tools today? A couple of reasons. One, they're really hard to do. They're really hard to use. They're not built in an integrated way. They're not approachable. A lot of times I like to say that they're built for the priests, right? In fact, they were. Most of these tools were built for the priests in the organizations, the very senior-most people. And then somebody said, hey, these are great things. We should push them down to the masses. Well, they were never designed for the mass of the organization, so that usually doesn't work well. So our focus was, well, how do you get from here to here? And it was really a couple things. It was focus on ease of use. So a lot of the stuff that we deliver in the team system is about integrating these types of tools into what a developer would expect, right? You don't have to use a separate tool for doing code coverage. It's just part of the compiler, that type of thing. So this notion of approachability and ease of use was the first thing. And the second thing was the integration. People... didn't want point solutions. In fact, a lot of customers, when we did those customer visits, would say, what we really wanted was we would give up any best-of-breed tool simply to have an integrated solution where data wasn't falling between the cracks and that type of thing. So that's the value proposition is integrated, approachable. We used to have these. It's very funny. When you're managing a team of...
When a developer sits down, what do you mean by integration? Give me an example of something that a developer will see in Visual Studio Team System.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll give you a couple of them. The first one is code coverage. So if you were going to do code coverage today, which it turns out not a lot of people are doing, which is effectively... let me give you a quick sort of overview on code coverage. Code coverage is the idea that when you run a set of tests... what lines of code, what percentage of the lines of code in your app was actually executed. So it gives you an idea of how effective the test cases are, right? So you know, code coverage is a great measurement of how effective those tests are. Without running code coverage, you really don't know what the level of effectiveness of your tests are. So if you were to do code coverage today, you would build out the executable using Visual Studio, 2003, and we create an executable. Then you would take that executable and give it to another tool, which would promptly rip the executable apart, inject a bunch of instructions in there, rebuild it, and then you would run that executable. And what that executable would do is, as you would run the app, you'd run your app, you'd play around, run your tests, it would be collecting code coverage information about what lines you touched, okay? There's several problems with that. First of all, you had to run it to a separate tool. Second of all, the really smart developers around basically would say, oh, wait. If there's a bug in that, that's not my code, right? Because that thing was ripped apart and re-instrumented and all these things. So there's all sorts of problems with it. And people just don't do it because of that. One of the things that we did in the team system is you can set a build configuration that says build, just like you can set any other debug option and those type of things that say build with code coverage. And now every time you build and every time you run. So a developer presses F5. The app compiles, up comes the app, he plays around with the IDE, shuts down the app. Immediately inside of Visual Studio, he gets code coverage information inside the IDE. We integrate it into the compiler, we integrate it into the shell. So that, to me, is sort of one example of integration.
Okay.
So,
what size team do you need to have before you really are a team system customer?
Sure, it's a great question. And
if I have three developers in a small shop, would I be a team system candidate?
I'm going to answer it two ways. I mean, I used to always say yes, and then that's kind of bitten us a little bit with this pricing and licensing discussion, which I think we'll have a little later. The fact is, from a value perspective, which is where I really want to start, any team that has a need for predictable collaboration. So if it's three people and we're all sitting in this office, no, you probably don't need that. You're collaborating right in real time. If you're three people and one person's in Budapest and one person's in Prague and one person is here, yeah, you probably do need something like this. Similarly, because the team system is about driving this predictable process, predictable collaboration. If you're building apps that you build in 2 weeks and have an average lifespan of 6 months, it's probably not worth the investment to have a predictable process because the overhead isn't worth the return on investment. Building apps that take 6 months and are in deployment for 5 years, you should be looking at the team system. So it's not really, there's not a team size per se. It's much more about Do you have a requirement for quality early and often? Do you have a requirement for this predictability, this predictable nature of software engineering? So, having said that, the licensing model works well. It works exceptionally well when you're 5, 10, 20, 100, 1,000. In those places, we are an order of magnitude cheaper than anything else you could buy. So in that, where we overlap or where we start getting close to the top of the pyramid again, the pricing looks, in fact, very inexpensive, which in and of itself is sometimes a problem. As you start to get, it's interesting, the dynamic plays out perfectly well in this drawing. As you go in this direction, these people have a sense of the value, and they're generally larger teams, and we get a pressure that says, this is an inexpensive or cheap tool. Is it really everything there? As you move in this direction, this set of people doesn't have a lot of context on the value, doesn't have a lot of context around what the market pricing for these types of things are, because they would never have bought them in the first place, right? They don't know that a load testing tool could cost you $250,000, and when we say it's $3,000, they don't have a context to make that decision, right? So in this direction, you know, we see the pricing make, you know, there's a sweet spot in here, and as you move up in this direction, the pricing seems inexpensive, and as you move in this direction, the value is harder for people to get right away. So we spend a lot of time there. So team size is a part of that. But I think more about predictability and the complexity of the app and the return on investment is how I think about it.
How's your team using team system?
How is my team? That's a great question. I just got back from a month in Europe, which was fantastic. We saw about 2,000 customers, and then I spent, I probably had 70 or 80 separate breakout meetings with these customers. And it was one of the most common questions was, and people ask it for a number of reasons. They want to know, is it real? They want to know, is it scalable? They want to know, is it stable? I mean, all of those things, that question of, do you use it as a proxy for them? Yeah. The answer is yes. In fact, inside of Microsoft, so two things to think about on this. One is a bulk of these tools are actually tools that we've used for many years. So the static code analysis tools, we purchased a company 7 or 8 years ago for multiple tens of millions of dollars to get access to that technology, and we've used it internally. The source code control system is something we're building out new, but the issue tracking system is based on the stuff we've used for 13 years. The profiling tools, every team inside of Microsoft uses these tools. The code coverage tools, every team in Microsoft uses these tools. But thinking about the server directly, like the Team Foundation server pieces, to make sure this is ready for our customers, we have been using it internally, my team of about 300 people, for 9 months, when it was very early to start.
Now your team is in several places in the world, too.
Yeah, I told you I can't talk about it. It's a very interesting picture. For a long time, I never thought I would draw a picture like this inside of Microsoft, because generally all development, is done here in Redmond. But if you think about the database and my core team being in Redmond, I have North Carolina.
And why did North Carolina happen?
It's for a couple of reasons. One, one of the chief architects of our product, a guy named Brian Harry, who many of you know from the CLR days, I think he promised his wife that he was going back to North Carolina. And we said, well, if you're going back to North Carolina, go and take a team with you. And so it's been remarkably successful. We're building out a development site there and growing the team. They're in Raleigh. So if you're in Raleigh, and you want a job, contact Brian. Yeah. It's been great for us because recruiting on the East Coast is people who want to stay in the East Coast.
That's how you know you've arrived at Microsoft, right? When you can move anywhere.
When you can move,
hey, we'll build you a plant right where you land.
Exactly. And Brian, for those of you who know Brian, he's well worth the investment. So. Yeah. But the team's great out there. I've been real excited about, we've been out there a couple years now, and the hiring's been really good, and the quality of the team is real exciting. It's very positive. So, anyway, we also obviously have India. We have a team there. We have a team in the UK, in Cambridge. Let's see. We have a team in Copenhagen, Denmark. Hagen, I think I got it right, yeah. We have a team in Fargo. I think I got them all. Did I miss it? Yeah. So the interesting thing is, there are over 300 people There's over 800 users of the system, but there are over 300 basically developers that are capable of checking in and checking out of the system. It is a single server in Redmond. All of these are done check-in, check-out through the over the network basically. And some of these connections are not heavy-duty connections. I know the one to North Carolina runs at about, I think, 2 megabit, and they use it for all of their email and everything else. So these guys are checking out gigs of data over this line. So a lot of work was done to make this optimized for this. It's something on the order of, in certain scenarios, it's 400 times the performance of SourceSafe over the particularly in the low bandwidth, high latency networks, because SourceSafe was never designed for that world. So, and all the traffic that comes across the wire is all done through SOAP, HTTP. The server, it's interesting, this server here is actually an ASP.NET server. There's an ASP.NET server that sits and is backed by a UConn server. So all of the infrastructure for the configuration management, source code control, issue tracking, build system, all that stuff is actually ASP.NET and managed codes.
And what did you learn from having such a dispersed team?
How
does that play into the product?
One of the most important pieces is the guys who build the server are in North Carolina, and the server sources are here. So if anybody who feels the pain of working remotely, it's those guys, which was by design. So they spend a lot of time optimizing the protocol and optimizing the performance over that sort of system. We learned about being precise about who was building what and that communication was super important. We learned about flowing data across the system. Like, they have a bunch of testers out there, and I know what they're doing every day. Right. I can look at the issues, I can look at the bug matrix, I can look at the reporting, and have complete visibility, which is a big part of the team system. It was sort of the 12 steps to anything, right? Well, CIOs basically said, look, Rick, what we really want is we want predictability. We want 100% success, but we know we're not going to get that. So what we want is predictable cycles. We want to know that 60% of our apps are going to work each time, not 20%, that type of thing. And so the first step of predictability is visibility. You got to see what's going on. So a big part of the team system was this easy visibility, and we use it. We use it every day. I get reports from the server that says, the issues of the day and that type of thing. So so a lot of that stuff is very important, and we use it internally.
What advice would you have to a software team that might be starting out today, using the stuff you've learned over the last few years? Well, having such a diverse dispersed team.
Sure. I mean, I think it's, I would say a couple things. One is make sure you're clear on the objectives that you've got. And so some set of software teams will go all the way back to, requirements gathering and business process and those types of things. And I think it's really appropriate for your large-scale sort of enterprise. But even a small team, you need to be really clear on what the value proposition is that you're trying to deliver. One of the things that I'm a simple guy. I have a simple mind. So I try and I find that it's really easy to communicate to 300 people if you can make them simple messages. So we had a couple simple goals. One was the integration is more important than any point product. We're going to sell the integration before we sell the point product. Another one was out-of-the-box productivity day one, right? Every tool in that top part of the triangle is sold with consulting. A lot of those companies make 30, 40% of their revenue from consulting services because it's so hard to roll out and use the tools. And we said, we're not in that business. This has got to be out of the box, productive day one. So I think that if you're a software company starting up, you should be clear on what your value proposition is. What is your unique, differentiated value? And for us, it was going to be integration and out of the box, productivity day one. And if you're really clear on those things, for us, that was it. For you, it might be something else. But you can build a kick-ass product. I mean, and I think that it's, with 300 people all revolving around those two simple ideas, I think we did a pretty good job in V1.